Welcome to Facts Roundtable, a podcast dedicated to navigating life with food allergies across the lifespan, presented in a welcoming format with interviews and open discussions. Each episode will explore a specific topic, leaving you with the facts to know or use. Information presented via this podcast is educational and not intended to provide individual medical advice. Please consult with your personal board-certified allergist or healthcare providers for advice specific to your situation. Hi, everyone. I'm Caroline Mwasisi, and I am your host for the Fact Roundtable podcast. I am a food allergy parent, advocate, and the founder of the Grateful Foodie blog, and I am Fact's Vice President of Community Relations. Before we start today, I would just like to take a moment to thank the American College of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology for their kind sponsorship of Facts Roundtable podcast. And please note that today's guest was not sponsored by the college or compensated in any way by the sponsor to participate in this specific podcast. Some patients living with food allergies also manage eosinophil-associated diseases. To help us better understand these diseases and what we can do to be supportive, Mary Jo Strobel, Executive Director of the American Partnership of Eosinophilic Disorders, sits down at Facts Roundtable podcast to discuss the various diseases, including EOE. Welcome, Mary Jo, to Facts Roundtable podcast. We're absolutely delighted that you are with us today. I know you're very busy, so I appreciate your time. We'll be discussing eosinophil-associated disease and its conditions, and I'm just thrilled to have the expert in the house.
Thank you so much for having me. This is terrific.
Well, again, I really appreciate your time, so thank you. So now today we have such an interesting topic to discuss, but before we start, can you share with listeners a little bit about your background and the American Partnership for Eosinophilic Disorders, also known as APFED?
Yes, thank you. So my background is in patient advocacy with IgE-mediated food allergies and anaphylaxis. And working in that space, I had known of these conditions, particularly eosinophilic esophagitis, because often people would reach out to our organization for support. We didn't have that information. And I remember when APFED had first founded, it was so terrific to be able to have a credible source of information to direct people to who were looking for this education and information about these conditions. Ironically, in that time frame, my sister had called me up one day to say that my niece was diagnosed and she was trying to pronounce eosinophilic esophagitis. So I asked her, is this the condition you're talking about? And she was very surprised that I had known what this was. So it was shortly after that my attentions turned to eosinophil disease. So APFED, I mentioned, had formed during that time period, but this is in 2001, a group of parents of children who had these conditions had come together to form an organization where people and families affected by these conditions could arm themselves with knowledge and provide science-based accurate information so that patients could learn more about these conditions and how they're diagnosed and how they're managed, and to build a supportive community that could support research. So our mission is to passionately embrace support and improve the lives of patients and families affected by eosinophil-associated diseases through education and awareness, research, support, and advocacy.
Thank you. One, thank you for the work that you do. Sorry your niece has joined this group, but what a great aunt to have. I'm sure they're absolutely thrilled to be able to pick up the phone and get all the latest and greatest right from family.
Well, sadly, I will say my niece passed away 3 years ago, not from eosinophilic esophagitis. She was diagnosed with colon cancer. So sadly, she's no longer with us. Her brother, ironically, was diagnosed with eosinophilic esophagitis about a year and a half ago. So yes, it's terrific to have that support right within family and to be able to get information quickly, I think, you know, has probably made all the difference.
Well, I'm sorry to hear of her passing. And again, grateful for the work that you do and how you're just helping so many people.
Thank you.
So now let's dive right into this topic because it's very broad. what are some examples of eosinophil-associated diseases? And I know that's a big question, and I know you are the person to tackle it.
So I will condense that because I really could talk all day about this. But let's start with what an eosinophil is. It's a type of white blood cell. It's part of our immune system. Many different problems can cause high numbers of eosinophil in the blood, including allergies, whether it's food or environmental, certain infections, perhaps caused by parasites, certain cancers, and other medical conditions. But when a person has too many eosinophils in their digestive system, tissues, organs, and/or bloodstream without another reason, it may be an eosinophil-associated disease. It's further characterized, the diagnosis, depending on where the eosinophils are found. So an umbrella term for the subsets that affect the gastro tract are eosinophilic gastrointestinal disorders, and that can be eosinophilic esophagitis, eosinophilic gastroenteritis, eosinophilic colitis, umbrella term for anything in the GI tract. Eosinophilic cystitis can affect the bladder. Eosinophilic fasciitis is connective tissue. And then you have subsets that eosinophilic granulomatosis with polyangiitis, which would be the lungs, the sinuses, the heart, various organ systems. Hypereosinophilic syndrome can be blood in any organ. So as you see, there are many different subsets.
That is a mouthful, just all those different names, but this is really tricky. So because it's such a broad spectrum, does a person need to see like an allergist or a GI person or pulmonologist or all of the above?
So people may have a number of specialists involved in their care, whether it's for diagnosis or for ongoing management. And the journeys can, in many ways, be similar to diagnosis. The journey to diagnosis can be similar, or it can be very different. Oftentimes, people will start with, once they recognize symptoms, and this could take a while before they seek care, it may be through a general practitioner who can then hopefully go on to recommend a specialist to help further along the diagnostics. In the cases of eosinophilic gastrointestinal disorders, those referrals would be going to a gastroenterologist to do a scope and biopsies. And from the biopsies, they look at the number of eosinophils that are found in those tissue samples, and that's how they arrive at that diagnosis. But for ongoing management, and again, this could vary by subset depending on the organ involved. For example, if it's the lungs, somebody would see a pulmonologist. But for eosinophilic GI subsets, it would be gastroenterology, allergists. It could be dietitians to help manage the diet. It could be mental health services, because there is a psychological component to this in that it can impact the quality of life, which of course can have impacts on mental health.
It definitely is a very broad subject, and it looks like you need a broad team to help you out.
Yes, it can be challenging to navigate and in some cases find those specialists, but we can talk a little bit about resources to help make that maybe a little easier.
And we definitely will. And for listeners, I just want you to know, as we have our conversation today, any resources that are mentioned, I will absolutely make sure those are in the show notes for you so you can find them. So now, looking at the food allergy world, we often hear of patients who have food allergies and EoE or other EGIDs. So could we take just a little more time here to talk about those diseases and then how their management crosses over? Like, how do you handle those multiples?
Sure. So as I had mentioned, you know, when a person has an EGID, it's the eosinophils are causing inflammation and damage to tissues and organs. So if we look at EoE, which is how I will abbreviate eosinophilic esophagitis because that is a mouthful, but looking at EoE specifically, the elevated numbers of eosinophils are causing the injury and inflammation to the esophagus, which in turn can make eating difficult or uncomfortable. It could potentially then result in poor growth, chronic pain, and difficulty swallowing. So left untreated, the inflamed esophagus then becomes stiff and narrow, and that makes food difficult to pass through. Sometimes this leads to a food impaction where the food gets stuck and a person needs emergency medical help to remove the food. So the two main treatments recommended for EoE are diet management and medications such as topical steroids or acid suppressors. And in May of 2022, the FDA approved dupilumab, which is a biologic, for the treatment of adults and children 12 and up with EoE. In some cases, a combination of these therapies can be used. So for those with eosinophil disease in other parts of the GI tract, such as eosinophilic gastroenteritis, dietary therapy may be prescribed as well as immune modulatory or anti-inflammatory medicines. But dietary therapy involves removal of suspected or known food triggers. And often that is the common allergy-causing foods like milk, wheat, eggs, soy, peanuts, tree nuts, fish, shellfish. Those who use dietary therapy to manage an EGID then avoid that problematic food. So that would mean label reading, meal prepping to avoid cross-contact, cooking with substitutes, and getting nutrients from other allowed foods. So very similar to management of what many of your audience members live with on a daily basis. For some people, though, elemental nutrition may be recommended to supplement the diet or for full nutrition. So if their diet is too restricted, they're going to need to get those nutrients, in some cases, through a specialized formula. It's an amino acid-based formula that doesn't cause an allergic response. And if somebody has difficulty drinking enough of that formula, or if the doctor believes it's necessary for other reasons, there may be a need for the placement of a temporary feeding tube or a more long-term alternative. So to answer the question in short, many of the practical strategies that go along with managing dietary restrictions would apply.
So now with food allergies, you know, we have this avoidance type system, and then we often ask our family and friends to help us with the avoidance, to help us manage the condition. So regarding EoE, and again, the eosinophil-associated diseases, I noticed on your website you had this amazing resource for families and friends on how they could be supportive. I have some friends who have children with EoE, and when I saw that, I sighed relief because I want to be helpful, but I don't know where to start. And so if you don't mind discussing that resource on the website, and again, how can people be supportive?
Sure. Thank you. I think one of the most important things to remember is that oftentimes these are invisible symptoms. So with the understanding that although your friend or your family member might look fine on the outside, the symptoms that they're complaining about, the fatigue that they might be complaining about, it's real and it's not imaginary. So that's one common thing we often hear from members of our community are when people say, oh, but you look fine, because indeed they don't feel fine. So it would be number one, approach with that understanding, learning more about the condition, particularly the type of subset. Certainly learning about the subset of eosinophil disease and how they best manage it and the type of support they need can be helpful. And then dietary restrictions, if they have them, be supportive. While it might seem like, oh, this is such a long list of foods that you have to avoid, keep in mind that it's necessary for them. It's not by choice. The person may likely be working with doctors that maybe they are trialing different foods through the process of elimination to find a trigger. Don't be surprised if one day they say a food is off limits, but the next day it's not. And that's, I think, particularly with children may be difficult if you're trying to explain why Johnny needs to avoid this today, but not tomorrow. You know, just keeping in mind too that this can impact quality of life. In addition to managing symptoms, your friend or family member might be feeling overwhelmed or misunderstood. So even simple things like offering to accompany them to a doctor's appointment or to babysit while they
go to a doctor's appointment or run some errands is likely to be really appreciated.
These are fantastic tips. Thank you. So staying on this topic, can you describe what a typical day might look like for a caregiver or a parent of a child who's managing these conditions?
So that's a really good question. And I think that varies depending on the severity of the symptoms and whether or not they have those under control. I think also depends on the type of treatment that the person is using to manage their EGID. Dietary therapy and avoiding common allergy-causing foods involves more planning than, say, taking a medication. But with EOE, it can be tough to swallow food, and we hear people share that the interest to eat often is just not there. Difficulty swallowing can make it so that people might need more time to eat. For example, they may take smaller bites. They may need longer time to chew the food so that it's easier to swallow, or they may need to drink a lot of liquid with meals to help push the food down. Certain foods they have to avoid, not necessarily because they're a trigger, but because the texture makes it difficult to swallow. So sometimes people cope with that by using things like sauces or dips to lubricate the food to help it go down easier. With these conditions, the eosinophilic GI conditions with the symptoms, you know, stomach pain, for example, can sometimes be debilitating. This can cause missed time from school or work. It can affect your sleep. It can affect socializing or traveling. Some people report feelings of being socially isolated or feeling socially isolated. So the symptoms and related pain, like I said, are internal, often not visible. And again, it's just understand that they don't feel well, even if they look fine, and they shouldn't have to prove to others that they indeed feel poorly. I had mentioned, you know, the impact a chronic medical condition can have on the quality of life. So sadly, reports like anxiety and depression are not uncommon in our community. The financial burden can also impact daily life. When you factor in ongoing medical care or when prescribed medication used off-label, meaning the FDA may have approved it for the use of one condition, but has not approved or indicated the use for another condition. In the terms of off-label medication, that's not always covered by insurance. And the cost of dietary therapy, such as specialty ingredients or elemental formula, as your listeners probably very well know, can be expensive. So all of this can impact what a typical day looks like. I think many of our community members would probably say there is no typical day.
Well, it sounds like every day is a challenge because everything's changing. I think it's so important that you had brought up they might look fine, but they don't feel fine. And I think that's just so important as humans that we have compassion and empathy and we just don't make assumptions and we just try to remain supportive.
You're right. You're right, Carolyn.
So now looking forward, are there any cures or treatments or what's on the horizon here?
Well, these are chronic conditions and they require ongoing care. So some sets have the FDA-approved therapies for treatment, and some do not. So earlier, I talked about the treatments for the GI subsets of eosinophil disease, but for conditions, other conditions of eosinophil-associated disease like hypereosinophilic syndrome or EGPA and eosinophilic asthma, there are biologics available that are indicated for use, and there are several clinical trials that are enrolling people with various subsets of these conditions. So I would encourage your listeners to check out apfed.org or clinicaltrials.gov to learn about them.
And again, listeners, I will make sure you have those links. So now what should a listener do if they suspect they themselves or a loved one might have an eosinophilic condition?
So talk to your doctor and share your suspicion or request a referral to a gastroenterologist who can perform that scope and a biopsy to establish a formal diagnosis if your doctor feels that what you're describing is in line with an EGID. Our website has a specialist finder, which is an opt-in database of providers who treat these conditions. But you can also find patient-friendly information about best practices for diagnostics and management for the subsets, because they can all differ. But that can be found on the website as well.
Thank you. And I'm sad to say we are coming to the end of our time together. So before we part ways, what information do you want to make sure listeners hear from you today?
That you're not alone. I mean, there's a wonderful network of patients and caregivers and other community members that are working tirelessly to support and to improve the quality of life for people with these conditions. There's a wealth of information online. On apfed.org, you can learn about these conditions, how they're managed, but also practical strategies for daily living, like how to navigate school and work, how to shop and cook when you're eliminating foods. We also have an annual patient education conference that rotates around the country and an online support community that has nearly 17,000 members from around the globe who are eager to share and learn and support each other. So again, all of that can be accessed through apfed.org.
What an incredible network. Wow. And I also have to add to listeners, the website's amazing. I confess, I went on there just to spend a little bit of time, and about an hour later, I'm still in there reading and learning. It was incredible. So I highly recommend to everyone, stop in there, take a look at it, whether you have this condition or not. I think it's always good just to have that awareness. So Mary Jo, thank you so much again for your time. This has been absolutely information-packed and wonderful, and I just appreciate you so much. FACT appreciates you so much, and thank you again for your time.
Well, thank you, Carolyn. This was a great opportunity to share with your listeners more about eosinophil-associated disease, and we very much appreciate what FACT does for the community. Thank you for everything that you do.
You're welcome. You know, we all work together.
We do.
I would like to take a brief moment to thank the American College of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology for sponsoring today's show. Thank you for listening to FACT's Roundtable Podcast. Stay tuned for future episodes coming soon. Please subscribe, leave a review, and listen to our podcast on Pandora, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and Stitcher. Have a great day, and always be kind to one another.